Chapter 23. A snort of generous indignation told me that Anne's fine nature was deeply stirred, and even in the gathering darkness I could see her eyes flashing. "The little brutes," she said. "Did they hurt you, Joey dear?" "Not a bit, thanks." "Sure, quite. They hadn't time." "Owing," I said with genuine feeling in my voice, "to your prompt action. You were magnificent." "I did move pretty quick. I thought they were going to massacre you. Who were they?" "Tommy Murphy and Orlando Flower. I'd like to boil them in oil." I too felt that a touch of boiling in oil would do the young hellhounds good, and regretted that it was not within the sphere of practical politics. However, I pointed out the bright side. "You must have made them sit up a bit with those buffets of yours," I said. "They sounded good ones." "They were. I nearly sprained my wrist. I don't know whether it's Tommy or Orlando, but one of them's got a head like concrete, darn him. Still, all's well that ends well." "Hello, I thought you told me they didn't hurt you." "No." "Then why are you limping?" It was an embarrassing question. After the stand I'd taken in our conversation that afternoon, championing April June's sweetness and gentleness against all counter-argument, it would have made me feel a bit of a chump to reveal what I might call the paper-knife side of her character. I feared the hoarse laugh and the scornful "I told you so." The best of women cannot refrain from these. "I'm a bit stiff," I said. "I've been sitting." "And sitting makes you stiff, does it? You octogenarians, it's always your joints that go back on you. What were you doing there anyway? Had you been calling on April June?" "I did look in for a moment." "Knowing that Tommy Murphy and the flower boy were just lurking and waiting for their chance? Really, young Joseph, you ought to scrap that head of yours. It isn't worth the upkeep. What did you want to see April June about?" Here, too, I was unable to reveal the true facts. I went to give her a nosegay." "A what?" "Flowers, you know. A bouquet." She seemed bewildered. "You didn't." "Yes, I did." "Well, this beats me. I simply can't understand you, Joseph. One of these strange, inscrutable personalities, if ever there was one. I've heard you say 100 times that you think April June a pill. In my presence you have many a time and oft alluded to her as a piece of cheese, and yet you brave fearful perils to bring her gifts of flowers. And when I ventured on a few criticisms of her this afternoon, you drew yourself up to your full height and bit my head off." Remorse gripped me. "I am sorry about that." "Oh, don't apologize. All I'm saying is that it's puzzling. By the way, how much of that pork pie did you manage to get away with? I left early, if you remember." "Not much. I'm frightfully sorry about that, too." "I bet you are." "I mean that you should have lost your job because of your kindly act." "Oh, that's all right. I wasn't looking on it as my life work, anyway. Don't give it a thought, Joey. By this time tomorrow, I expect to be your late hostess's press agent. I was coming to see her to talk things over, and that's how I happened to be on the spot just now. I suppose I ought to go back, but I don't like to leave you alone. I shouldn't be surprised if Tommy and his little friend weren't still lurking in the shadows somewhere. They're like the hosts of Midian. They prowl and prowl around." Precisely the same thought had occurred to me. I begged her with a good deal of earnestness on no account to leave me alone. "Yes, I think you need my stout right arm." She mused for a moment. "I'll tell you what let's do. Could you manage a soda? I certainly could." "All right. Then if you don't mind me taking you a little out of your way, we'll go to the Beverly Wiltshire drugstore and I'll buy you one. I can phone her from there." I assured her that I did not mind how much out of my way she took me, and in another jiffy we were breezing along, she talking idly of this and that, I silent, for my soul was a mere hash of seething emotions. And if you want to know why my soul was a mere hash of seething emotions, I'll tell you. It was because, in the brief space of time which had elapsed since she had caught Tommy Murphy and Orlando Flower, those two snorters on their respective earholes, love had been reborn within me. Yes, all the love which I had lavished on this girl 2 years ago, and which I had supposed her crisp remarks at Cannes had put the bee on for good, was working away at the old stand once more as vigorously as ever. Many things, no doubt, had contributed to this. Reaction from the meretricious spell of April June for one, her gallant behaviour in the late turn-up for another. But chiefly, I think, it was her gay, warm-hearted sympathy, her easy kindness, her wholesome, genial camaraderie. and, of course, that pork pie. Anyway, be that as it may, I loved her, I loved her, I loved her. And a lot of use it was, loving her. I felt bitterly as I champed a moody nut sundae at the drugstore while she did her telephoning. Of all sad words of what you call it and thingamy, the saddest are these. It might have been. If only I'd had the sense to realize right away that there could never be any other girl in the world for me. I wouldn't have fooled about eating ice cream at that party of April June's, and I wouldn't have started the old tooth off, and I wouldn't have gone to I.J. Zizbaum at the same time that little Joey Cooley was going to B.K. Burwash, and in short, none of this business would have happened. As it was, where did I get off? She was betrothed to my cousin Eggie, and even if she hadn't been, I was in no possible shape to ask her to share my lot. All the old obstacles which I had recognized as standing between myself and April June stood just as formidably between myself and her. In what spirit, even if she'd been free, would she receive a proposal of marriage from Joey Cooley? Hey-ho about summed it up, and I was murmuring it to myself in a broken sort of way when she came out of the telephone booth and joined me in a second nut sundae. "I've talked to her," she said. "Everything's set." I didn't know what she meant by this, but I said, "Oh, yes," and plugged away at my sundae, finishing it as she began hers. She asked me if I'd like another. I said I would, and she ordered it, a princely hostess. "Well," she said, resuming conversation, "you've had a busy afternoon, haven't you?" I laughed a trifle mirthlessly. "I have indeed. How did everything go off? I beg your pardon? Mr. Brinkmeyer's statue, the unveiling." I started as if she'd bitten me in the leg. A lump of nut sundae fell from my nerveless spoon. Believe it or not, what with the pressure of other matters, I'd clean forgotten all about that statue. "Gosh!" I exclaimed. "What's the matter?" It was some moments before I could speak. Then frankly, and without evasion, I told her all. She listened with flattering attention, pursing the lips a bit when I came to the frog motif. "You think Miss Brinkmeyer has found those frogs?" she said. "If I can read the female voice aright," I replied, "I'm dash certain she's found them, and by this time she'll have learnt that I gave the unveiling ceremonies a miss, and it will have been reported to her that the statue, when unveiled, had a red nose. In short, if ever a bloke was in a hell of a jam, I am that bloke." "You mustn't say hell, Joey. There are times," I replied firmly, "when one has jolly well got to say hell, and this is one of them." She seemed to see my point. "Yes, you're certainly in a swivet." The word, I took it, was American for soup. I nodded gloomily. "Still, there's one thing. They'll have forgotten all about it tomorrow." "You think so?" "Well, of course." Her optimism infected me. "That's fine," I said. She rose. "The best plan is for me to take you home now," she said. "Come along. Everything's going to be all right." I allowed her to escort me to the Brinkmeyer residence. And it was only after she'd left me at the gate that I saw the flaw in her specious reasoning. True, when one took into consideration the speed with which life in Hollywood moved, it might quite well happen, as she predicted, that the morrow would bring oblivion. But what she had omitted to take into her calculations was what the dickens was going to happen tonight. I found my thoughts straying in the direction of Miss Brinkmeyer. After all that had occurred, it seemed too much to hope that I should find her in a sunny mood. In fact, the nearer I got to my destination, the more firmly convinced did I become that that hairbrush of hers must be regarded as a moral certainty. It was, accordingly, in pensive mood that I shinned up onto the outhouse roof. And I hadn't set foot on it before I began to suspect the worst. There was a light in my bedroom, and I found the circumstance sinister. Moving softly, I crossed the roof and peered in. It was as I had feared. That light indicated trouble. The blind had not been drawn, and I was enabled to get a clear view of the interior. My inspection revealed Miss Brinkmeyer sitting bolt upright in a chair. Her face was stony, and yet one noted on it a certain wistful, yearning look, as if she were waiting for something. She wore a pink dressing gown, and in her hand, tightly grasped, was a hairbrush. That look was explained. The something for which she was waiting was me. I tiptoed back across the roof and noiselessly descended into the garden. I could see that what the situation demanded was clear, hard, intensive thinking. And I was burning up the brain cells pretty earnestly when all of a sudden I became aware of a bloke standing beside me. "Hey," he said. "Hello," I said. "Are you the coolie kid?" he said. "Yes," I said. "Pleased to meet you," he said. "A civil cove." "Pleased to meet you," I replied, not to be outdone in the courtesies. "Right," he said. Something wet and sploshy came slapping over my face, and I smelt the smell of chloroform. And it was suddenly borne in upon me that, on top of everything else I'd been through that day, I was now being kidnapped. It seemed to me to put the tin hat on things. "Well, this is a nice bit of box fruit," I remember saying to myself as I passed out. And I meant it.